Good morning. What's her title? I'll give you a hint. It's the same as it's been the last 2 days. Personal integrity. Thank you. What did we talk about yesterday? So the first day we had the metaphor of the clay vessel, the pot. What was our metaphor yesterday? Right, a fighter jet. And what are the three things that will keep your plane in the air? Humility, self-denial, wise confrontation. Excellent. Thank you. So we've had an earthen vessel. We've been in the sky. Now it's time to hit the water, don't you think? Amen. So one of my favorite things to do after a day of work is load up the family, get the boat out of the shop, and go boating or fishing or swimming. I just have a small boat, aluminum boat with a 25-horse motor, and we put it in the Coeur d'Alene River, and we have a certain obscure lake that we like to go to down there that you can't drive to, you can only boat to it, and it's usually empty. And generally, we have the lake all to ourselves. And as you're traveling down the river, of course, as fast as the boat will go, there's plenty of things to watch for out front. Other boats, there might be sticks floating in the water or rocks. But if you take a second to glance behind you, you see the wake streaming out from on both sides, and there's the rooster tail kind of shooting out the middle. And you can actually learn a lot by looking at your wake. You can see whether or not you're up on plane, or if you're kind of bogged down and dragging. You can see if your boat's balanced. You can see if you're going straight. You can see your travel path way back, how far you, where you've been. And apparently, the professionals can see even more than that. They can analyze prop health and stuff like that. So we're going to do a little bit of wake analysis today. So you were a vessel, then you were a fighter jet, and today you're the boat. Maybe it's a bit like one of those bad dreams where you thought you were wrestling with a kangaroo, and then it turned out to be your brother, and then it was the milk jug. But now you're the boat. And you're cruising through life at full speed, navigating, avoiding rocks and deadheads, dodging in and out of people's lives, and you're leaving a wake. So what constitutes a healthy wake? There are four things we want to talk about. Balance, structure, motivation, and navigation are the four things that will give you a healthy wake. Now I'm going to start by drawing a boat. I get a lot of practice drawing boats because my 5-year-old son always wants me to draw boats or trucks or something. But this time we're gonna be looking at the back of the boat. Somewhere in here is the motor. This is just a regular old outboard. Down here is the propeller. And here's the water line. Need a tiller handle on this thing. Something like that. Oh, and I was going to see if I could give it a little bit of... I'm going to run out of room here, obviously. So that's our boat, looking at it from the back. So, first of all, balance is what we need. So when our family gets into a small boat like mine, balance is important. If you're over 50 pounds, it kind of matters where you sit in this thing. But some of my friends are big old boys. And I don't have enough lead in my pants, I guess, to balance them out always. And so no matter where they are, I'll be riding high on the other side. So the best place for them is usually right in the middle. If you don't, it's harder to get up on a good speed, get up on plane. And you'll see it in the wake. There's more spray coming off of the heavy side. It's a little splashier on that side. But if I want a healthy wake, I've got to balance the boat. So, I think I drew this whole thing a little bit too high. I'm just going to write this outside the boat. On one side, we got performance. And the other side is going to have relationship. Now, there's a number of things that can go under these points. The performance side is that's kind of the efficiency side. That's the get or done, crash through obstacles. You need that. And then there's the relationship side, the side that feels and pays attention to different learning styles and kind of brings people along. Under these points, first one I'm going to put love and truth. So that's an obvious, easy balancing thing. You need both of those. Truth spoken in love. This is an easy one to get some lean on. Some of us are so tender that it's hard to just straight up tell the truth sometimes. And some of us are so straightforward and direct. We want to get the truth into this situation and scrap the mushy stuff. Somebody else can deal with that. But it needs to be balanced. Another one is authority. Balanced with vulnerability. We could probably do a talk on each one of these. I'm just going to kind of bring them out and point them out to you. But you hold a lot of power, authority in your hands as a teacher. You are the authority. You can make these children do what they are supposed to do just because I said so. And you need to take that authority. That is actually quite important for you as a teacher. And I remember in my first year of teaching, that was hard for me to do. I was the upper grade teacher, and to realize that I'm now in charge of this whole classroom, plus I'm kind of the one they look to and ask for other stuff throughout the school. And I kind of had to learn to sort of mentally take a step forward and take those decisions, make those decisions, and stop second-guessing myself and just use that authority. But authority is also easy to weaponize, and we have to balance that with vulnerability. The state of being exposed to the possibility of being attacked or harmed, either physically or emotionally. Not being afraid of our own emotions, willing to express my own struggles. Did you know people don't really trust you until they see the cracks in your armor? I find that interesting, but it's true. Till they know that you're like they are. The last few years I've been working with Christian Aid Ministries a little more closely, and there's men around there who I used to find very intimidating. They had everything put together. They're the ones who are traveling around the country giving presentations and writing books. And I had to work with some of these fellows, and I was really nervous around them. But the longer I get to know them, I realize they're just like me. They have some issues. They've got some cracks in their armor. And I've learned to love them and trust them in a way that I never did before, just because they're so approachable. And they let me get close enough to see the cracks in their armor. But they still hold a tremendous amount of influence and authority. Honesty. Balanced with humility. Now, we talked about this at length yesterday with the whole humility issue, but humble enough not to promote my abilities, but honest enough to recognize them as gifts from God and not bury them in the earth. Another one. Boundaries. Balanced with availability. We want to be able to say yes to opportunities, but we need boundaries. And the busier you get, the more opportunities you are, they realize that I've got to say no to this. It's a good thing, but the good has to give way to the best this time. We want to be available and love and help the children, but we can't do for them maybe what their parents have been neglecting to do. Maybe that's a boundary we should watch out for. We want to be so available and doing all this for them. For high school teachers, we want to be caring and empathetic to the students, but we need clear relational boundaries. That could be a talk all its own, probably should be. Here's another one. If you want a word for a spelling bee sometime, try spontaneity. That one's hard to spell. Spontaneity versus structure. Everybody loves spontaneity, but if you're too heavy on spontaneity, you have chaos. And you can see whether or not some of these things are balanced by looking at your wake. What kind of effect am I having with too much structure or too much spontaneity? Where am I starting to see some odd splashes? Where am I starting to see a lot of disrespect? Where am I starting to see a lot of tired, long faces all the time? Maybe I'm a little too heavy on structure. So some of these things, balance, is what's going to give our boat a healthy wake. Next is structural integrity. What's below the waterline? Years ago, one of my friends bought a cedar strip homemade canoe, and he brought it around where I was working, and we got to looking at this thing, and it was a beautiful canoe. He had it sitting up on his truck. Well, we got to looking at it from the back, and the keel was crooked. The very bottom of whoever had made this thing, it actually, I don't know if the forms weren't lined up or something, but it was actually had a bit of a twist to it. Another time, more recently, I was looking at a boat that was for sale, and my family's getting older and bigger, and I'd like to find something a little bigger that we can all fit into better. And this was a nice aluminum boat, had everything that my boat doesn't, had carpet floor, steering wheel, a nice big motor. But I got to looking around on this thing, and it was up on a trailer, and here are three of the rivets on the bottom of the boat had faint, rusty watermarks kind of seeping out of them. And I don't have a college education, but I can kind of figure out that if your boat is leaking water out of it, it's probably a bad sign. The floor, though, was in great shape. You walk around inside and everything is fine. It's all underneath. And it can leak down there for a long time before anyone would ever notice. But it's rotting the underside of the floor, growing mold down in there. So what's below your waterline? Is there anything you don't want people to see that's kind of a convenient place to have it where it's just down there? Got some barnacles growing down there that just kind of grew there without you really meaning to, but they're kind of there and you're not sure how to get them off. All of your phone time is probably below the waterline. The way I think and feel is below the waterline. My earbuds are below the waterline. There's old injuries, old hurts, gaping wounds that maybe haven't been healed that are below the waterline. Is there something rotting out your floorboards? Is there a big old ego down there that is kind of a ballast on your boat rotting out the floorboards? Because what happens below the waterline never stays below the waterline. Judas Iscariot is actually a very amazing character in the Bible. We think of him as the traitor. He's the one kind of skulking in the back of the crowd, waiting for his chance. But who do you make the treasurer of your group? The most trusted person, right? He's got the money. That was Judas. And I think he was held in high regard by the rest of the disciples. And when Jesus said, "One of you is going to betray me this night," did they all kind of cut their eyes over at Judas, wondering if it was him? No, they said, "Is it I?" They had as much reason to be suspicious of themselves, or more reason to be suspicious of themselves than they had of Judas. Even when Jesus sent him out, he said, "That thou doest, do quickly," and he sent him. And everybody else thought he'd been sent on some kind of an errand. He'd been so successful in pulling the wool over everybody's eyes for so long, he has to have been one of the world's most successful hypocrites. One year when I was in school, our regular school teacher took off a few weeks for Bible school, and we had a substitute come in for 3 weeks, and we all kind of liked him. We wished he'd stay. We liked him better than our other teacher. You know how that goes. And a few years after that, he was ordained a deacon in another church. But soon after that, he was discovered on his computer looking at pornography. And he tried to get clean, and he went through some struggles, and he worked and worked, but he was hooked. He couldn't get free. And to this day, I understand that his life is still just a wreck. We couldn't see that. None of us students, none of the people who ordained him. He seemed like such a decent, good fellow. But it was all below the waterline. Have you answered the purity question in your life? Because see, Jesus was aiming below the waterline when he said some things like, you've heard them of old times say, thou shalt not kill. But I'm talking about, thou shalt don't be angry. And you've heard it said, thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say unto you that whosoever looketh on a woman, looketh on a man, if you will, you've committed adultery already in your heart. And your students look at you and expect that you have perfect integrity. You're just the model of integrity to them. And that's called trust. Don't lie to them. What that does to children, to realize their teacher is living a double, sick, twisted life, you may as well put a boot on their faith and try to stomp it out. Because rest assured, it will come out. Jesus warned, there's nothing covered that shall not be revealed, neither hid that shall not be known. What's below the waterline never stays below the waterline. So, I would ask you, if you haven't found personal victory, and I'm not talking about struggle, we all struggle. Struggle is how you win. I'm talking about living in failure and defeat. Find some help. This is not a DIY, do-it-yourself project. And if you just can't bring yourself to fix that problem, don't teach children. Now is actually a good time to call your board and let them know. The shame of that is less than the shame of finding out in the middle of the school year. So it's a question only you can answer, and we really do. We need to be serious about this. And the final answer, I guess, comes on the day your boat gets pulled out of the water for all the world to see. And integrity then is when appearance and reality are exactly the same. And another thing you can do is you can actually mount an underwater camera on your boat that shows everyone as good as possible what's going on under the waterline. It's called accountability. It's called an accountability app on your phone. It's called sharing your location on Google Maps, maybe with your wife or your parents. Tell your host family where you're going, what you're doing. And just invite that accountability into your life. Open the windows, throw up the shades. We hosted a teacher a few years back, and I just loved how she was always around. She just, when we were doing something as a family, she was just always kind of hanging around and doing something. Sometimes she was working on her own projects, but she was around, and we never had any questions at all. Just invite that accountability into your life. Super important. All right, now motivational integrity. How's your prop? So to leave awake, you have to have something pushing you. My wife and I had some family visiting from out of state years ago, and we decided to take them fishing. And on the way out to the lake, we stopped at the gas station, and I reached into the boat, grabbed the gas tank, set it on the ground, filled it up. We drove out an hour to the lake, put the boat in the water, jumped in the boat, and no gas tank. Thankfully, we had paddles, but I had left the gas tank by the pumps. Needless to say, our wake was not much more than a ripple that day. So if you want a decent wake, you're going to need some motivation. You'll have to get the mattress off your back in the morning. Splash some cold water on your face. Go for a jog before school starts. Is that prop in good condition? What's pushing you through the water? Of course, there's the big pictures of the kingdom of God and the love of Jesus for these souls, these little souls, these compassion for these simple little people that need led and need someone to guide them. When Jesus saw the multitude of his students, what moved him? It says he's moved with compassion. They were like sheep, didn't have any shepherd. The love of wisdom, love of knowledge, curiosity, the desire to know things, all those things are going to push your boat through the water. Now, oftentimes those things are kind of pie in the sky at 6 o'clock in the morning, and you're feeling discouraged, and a lot of times just an old-fashioned work ethic is the only thing that's going to keep your boat pushing. Sometimes it's just drag it out there and hit it again. Swing the bat. On that little lake that we like to go to, you have to navigate through a bunch of weeds to get there. It's probably why it's empty. But especially in the later summer, as the water level drops, the weeds start to get higher. But the best thing I've found to do is just open the throttle, hit it as fast as possible, and just get through it. But by the time I get through it, I'm losing speed. There's a whole bunch of weeds snagged on the motor leg, and I have to just stop everything, lift the motor, and let a whole bunch of cloud of weeds just drift away before we can go and gain speed again. So have you ever gotten a bunch of weeds wrapped around your prop? I know I have. Maybe it's nothing serious, just a whole bunch of distractions, a bunch of noise and white noise that's cluttering. Maybe it's personal health that gets wrapped around your prop and just kind of bogs you down. I used to be a vacuum cleaner for junk food. You can be as spiritual as you please, but if you're feeling bloated and sick and tired, you can't study properly. You can't teach with any energy. Physical health is actually quite important. You're not a whole lot of use in the classroom if you're just sick. You don't make much of a wake lying in bed. It used to be if I was studying for a sermon on Saturday afternoon in the summertime, I loved to sip on an ice-cold glass of root beer. But I could never figure out why I was always a complete zombie after that. My brain would tank and I'd end up with my head on the desk sleeping. Until my wife told me that it was probably a sugar crash. And she was right. No more root beer, no more sleepy, is how it worked. I thought we should try giving each of the children a big glass of root beer right before bed and see if it would help them, but that's I don't think it will work. She's not into that. So, but if you're hitting Starbucks every morning and evening for a double shot white chocolate mocha and chasing it down with a Red Bull, it'll take its toll. Just think of it this way. The entire church, the children, the parents, the board, the ministry, they've all decided that you're worth investing in, that your brain is worth investing in, and the way you think. And so you owe it to them to stay healthy. Now, I know, sometimes you can't help it. There's times that we get sick, and I don't want to discourage you in that way. But if you're feeling draggy in the water, maybe it's just time to clean your prop off. So that was motivational integrity. Now navigational integrity. So if the water is calm on a lake, you can look back, even after you've stopped the boat, and you can see way back where you've been. Maybe if you've been trolling slowly along a shoreline, it's kind of a straight line. Or maybe it's all over the place. Maybe I was threading a worm on a hook for the children running the motor with my foot while eating a cookie. Where am I going here? Where am I going with my life? Where is my example taking these children? Am I so focused on the day-to-day that I'm not really looking ahead, maybe toward the end of the year and things I need to be planning on? Is this rule that I'm going to make, is that going to be hard to enforce? Looking ahead. Is this book helping me toward my goal, or is it pulling me off course? So the wake tells the story of the navigator. My boat has kind of a strange issue. It always pulls to the right. I can never let go of the tiller handle. I've tried adjusting the trim. I've never figured out why it does that. But on a long trim, my arm gets tired of just always fighting it. And life is that way. It's a constant pull. Be aware of your particular temptations. What tends to pull you off course? Is it an eagerness to please, trying to keep my students happy, that sort of can veer me off course? A bigger paycheck? A prudent man looketh well to his going. And if you want to go straight, in a boat. You put the bow on a tree or a rock or something and just keep it there. And that'll keep you straight. And if my goal and the church's goal and the school board's goal are all aligned, then we're on a straight course. You are the navigator of your ship. Now, I want to talk a little bit, shifting gears a bit, to the people that are in our wake. There's people back there. You've probably been pulled across the water already on a tube or a board of some kind. Are the people in your wake happy, laughing, enjoying it, skipping across your waves on a tube, finding success? Or are they out there bobbing up and down like shark bait, vulnerable and scared, bleeding from the barnacled hull that just ran over them, maybe cut and slashed by a propeller that used them for personal advantage? Or have you gone so fast and taken so many tight corners that you've lost them back there somewhere, or they've flown off? Or maybe you're going so slow your propeller's clogged up and your motor's quit and they're swimming past you. Now, who needs a teacher anyway? And you're somewhere in the back saying, "Hey, wait up, I'm coming." There's people back there. How are they doing? There was once a man in the land of Uz. He was perfect. His name was Job. You can look it up for yourself. Job 1:1. He was perfect, it says. When you look that word up, it means complete. It also says he was pious, gentle, dear, coupled together, and I find that interesting. He was integrated. All those terrible things happened to Job. He lived through a nightmare. And his wife looked at him and said, "Dost thou still retain thine integrity?" And he said, wait, listen. I hear a foolish woman talking." And then here comes his friends trooping down the road. And they sat down and circled around him and looked at him quietly a whole week. And then finally they said, "All right, buddy, out with it. What's going on? Eliphaz, Bildad, Zophar, Elihu, what did you do? Something's down there. Something's below your waterline." And Job was adamant. He refused to give in to that. He said in 27:5, "Till I die, I will not remove mine integrity from me. My righteousness I hold fast. I will not let it go. I've made a covenant with my eyes. Let me be weighed in an even balance that God may know mine integrity." Could I say that? Could you say that? That he was being perfectly honest. And they kept pushing on it and pushing on it. And there's got to be something, until finally God just stepped in and said, "Hold it." And he vindicated his man. And it turns out Job had perfect personal integrity. But at the end of the book, it turns then to the people in his wake. His friends had to ride to freedom and restoration in his wake because of his good integrity. His children, his new children, found a safe, happy, welcoming wake. There was Jemima, the warm, affectionate dove, Keziah, the perfumed plant, and Karen, the cornucopia, the horn of plenty. Road to success on Job's wake. Eventually, you'll be just like Job. You'll be a name on a page. A name in the yearbook. And you'll be remembered in the minds of a group of children. What kind of a wake are you leaving behind for them? I hope this can be your prayer throughout the coming year. "I would be true, for there are those who trust me. I would be pure, for there are those who care. I would be humble, for I know my weakness. I would be brave, for there is much to dare." God bless you in your pursuit of being Job-like. Perfect personal integrity. Boat gets lifted out of the water. Everything's good. Everything's clean, strong, brave, humble. Thank you so much for your kind attention to me. You've been a good audience, and I appreciate it, and I've been blessed by being here with you all this week. So thank you.